Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday. It's good to be here with you all. So we're here for the Seven Steps to Awakening, as Ken said. And tonight we are beginning with quote 779. Quote 779. But as always, before I go directly into the teaching, what I'm going to do is play a song. The song is kind of like the prayer time or the silence time prior to the teaching. So the song that I have selected tonight is by Audrey Assad. Some of you guys will know this song. It's called Ought to Be.
I love you more than a slow falling summer rain, more than a silence that only the soul needs behind. I love you more, and I love you better than the gray of the autumn air, better than spring in its blooming against the sky. I love
we're here for the Seven Steps to Awakening. And let me give a link to anybody who likes to read along in the journal. There you go. And I will start by reading the quote, 779. Bringing to an end the activity of the selfish personality. All passion being laid aside when the supreme object is gained. Rest silent, enjoying the bliss of the true self in the eternal, through the perfect self from all doubt free. I'm laughing because I think my English teacher would have called this a run-on sentence. I feel like it's a sentence that needs to be looked at a little at a time because it has so much in it. Let me read it again. Bringing to an end the activity of the selfish personality. All passion being laid aside when the supreme object is gained. Rest silent, enjoying the bliss of the self in the eternal through the perfect self, from all doubt free. And just immediately I'm reminded of a video that I saw once, and if anybody ever finds this video on YouTube, please send it to me, because I have since looked for it a number of times and I've never been able to find it. I probably saw this at least 5 years ago. It's a Muji video, and in this particular video, there was a woman, you know, kind of sitting at his feet, because he, of course, was up on a platform and she was down on the ground floor. But she was going through an enormous amount of fear. I think she had her eyes closed, if I remember correctly, and she was describing for Muji the fear that she was experiencing on the inside. And, you know, anybody watching that didn't have Muji's insight would have thought that this woman was going through some kind of a panic attack or a mental breakdown of some type. And in fact, I remember there was someone else nearby who, you know, felt like this woman needed help and wanted to help her. And so, you know, pulled up, cut a couple of Kleenexes and started to hand them to the woman. And Muji, you know, he was silent, but he very excitedly, you know, motioned her to stop. Like, don't interfere with what's happening. And, you know, this woman went through all of this fear, and I don't remember what all she said, but she was describing every single thought she was having as she went through this fear. And then all of a sudden, you know, she just passed through the eye of the needle. What we were experiencing was the death of the ego, and Muji knew this. And then all of a sudden, everything about her changed, and she was just like, no inside, no outside. And I don't remember what else she was said. Those are the two lines that I remember. But she went on to describe her new vision, her new experience, having passed through that eye of the needle. But the reason that I'm reminded of that now is because I remember what Muji told her after this experience was over. He told her to go home, get inside of a sleeping bag, and zip it up over her head. And he wanted her to just stay with that realization, stabilize in that realization without any kind of temptation or distraction. And I feel like this long run-on sentence that I've just read is really saying the same thing. So when I read it again, listen, you know, Muji's way of saying it, go home and, you know, get inside of a sleeping bag and zip it over your head, you know, is much more succinct. But listen to this sentence now that I've told you that story, and I think you'll hear that here. So, bringing to an end the activity of the selfish personality. All passion being laid aside when the supreme object is gained. Rest silent, enjoying the bliss of the self in the eternal, through the perfect self, from all doubt free. So doesn't that sound like, you know, now that you have ended the selfish ego, go, you know, zip yourself up inside of a sleeping bag and stay with that, right? Stay with that. That reminds me also, it's been a couple of weeks since I've been here for the Seven Steps to Awakening. Last week I interviewed Bentinho instead of doing the seven steps. So 2 weeks ago we were looking at quote 778, and quote 778 said this in it: there is no other danger for him who knows but this wavering as to the self's real nature. Thence arises delusion, and thence selfish personality, thence comes bondage, and therefrom sorrow. And of course, we talked about that 2 weeks ago. So for some of you, this is going to sound familiar, especially since it has all those fences in it. You may remember. But what we talked about is, what I have always called false enlightenment. We talked about the fact that the ego can seem to be absorbed into the heart, and it can seem to be the final end of the ego. It can seem like we pass through the eye of the needle, and we've awakened to the true self. And in fact, the masters that talk about this say that is completely the experience. Like the experience is completely one of having awakened. But what can happen is that there can be a remnant of ego left. I saw a quote from Ramana Maharshi once that called it one thought. A remnant of ego left that can become dormant and hidden. And in the words of the devil in Luke chapter 4, right after Jesus's 40 days and 40 nights, it said that the devil, which of course is the ego, the devil withdrew until a more opportune time. In other words, the ego knew that right now, for lack of better words, the spirit, the clarity was too strong. And so what the ego did was it went dormant and waited until there was a more tempting opportunity. And then it showed itself again and tried to regain command and control. And in the story of Jesus, that occurred, it really showed up a couple of different times. We saw the ego show up a couple of different times. There was one right near the end of his life when he was in Jerusalem. He was actually staying in Bethany, and he and the disciples were walking to Jerusalem for a day of prayer and teaching. And in the Bible, it says that Jesus woke up hungry that day, which is kind of an interesting way to start a chapter in the Bible, because Jesus went through 40 days and 40 nights in the desert without food, and yet was so filled with spirit that he overcame over all of these temptations with the devil, right? On this day, he wakes up hungry. So right there, that language is kind of a sign that this was that more opportune time that the ego, the dormant ego, was waiting for. Something about Jesus that day, we don't know exactly why, but he was not as strong in spirit that day. So Jesus woke up hungry that day. And on his way to Jerusalem, he saw a fig tree, and he wanted to take some figs to eat. And the Bible is very, very clear that it wasn't the season for figs. In other words, there was no reason to expect that fig tree to have figs. But Jesus went to get figs from this fig tree, and when it had none, he became angry, and he cursed that tree, and it died. And this is the same day that Jesus went into Jerusalem, into the temple, and saw the buyers and sellers there, which they were always there. Saw the buyers and sellers there in the temple courts, and he became upset and turned over tables and that kind of thing. And if you read the Bible very carefully, this is in the book of John where it tells this story, the next day when Peter comments to him about the events of the previous day, Jesus seems to explain that he was in error, and he asks Peter to watch his mind very, very carefully. And then just a few days after that, we have the Garden of Gethsemane scene. And this is where the ego really comes up with that fear of death. And, we're told in the Bible that Jesus, either cried or sweated, I don't remember, tears of blood, which is a symbol of the fear. And in fact, in the book of Mark, it talks about how Jesus actually had to go into the garden three times before he was able to overcome the temptation of the body, the temptation of clinging to the body as myself, and surrender fully from that temptation and go through the eye of the needle and awaken. So what quote 778 was telling us was that there can be this apparent awakening, like Jesus would have experienced after the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, when there's actually still a bit of ego that is dormant, that is just waiting for a more opportune time. And this would explain why someone like Muji, or in this case, let me see who we're reading here, Sri Sankara, would say, once that ego appears to end, go zip yourself up in a sleeping bag, right? Focus only on that bliss of self. You know, do not be distracted by the world, because we really need to concentrate, even at that time when it seems like the awakening has occurred, we really need to concentrate on the self. You know, stay abiding in the self. Stay focused on the self. Because we still need, I'm going to call it, for lack of better words, the strength of the self if this dormant ego should return. We've been told by Michael Langford that for as long as the body remains, you know, continue to practice the awareness, watching awareness meditation. And the only thing I've ever heard, and I just want to say heard, because I can't verify this for myself at my present state of mind. I've always known intuitively there was a false enlightenment even before anybody else spoke about it. So I feel like that's verified by my own intuition. But this next thing I'm going to say, I honestly don't know. So I want to say that very clearly, because usually I only teach from what I feel that I know. But when you ask, how do you know the difference between the false enlightenment and the real thing? The only answer that I've gotten is the answer that there is no world. There is no world. All you know is the self. And so what that says to me is, even if my perception becomes very, very enlightened, an enlightened perception is not the same thing as what the Course would call knowledge or truth, right? The Course calls it true perception. So even if there's a very, very enlightened perception, I don't want to call it doubt. It's not clinging to doubt, because you should really only cling to spirit, cling to self, cling to truth. But it's just being humble enough to remain the student, to remain willingly absorbed in the self, instead of thinking some I'm done thought, which may lead you to slip away from being absorbed in the self without noticing it, and then be susceptible to different kinds of temptations that arise that bring that ego back, right? The ego comes back so strong, and sometimes it appears that teachers can be so blind to this. They still think of themselves, they've identified with the enlightened one. They think of themselves as the enlightened one. And so when the ego comes back and they start acting from the ego, it's in their blind spot, right? So again, this week's quote, 779, says, bringing to an end the activity of the selfish personality, all passion being laid aside when the supreme object is gained. And of course, those words supreme object are just a symbol, because as you know, the true self is not an object. All passion being laid aside when the supreme object is gained. Rest silent, enjoying the bliss of the self in the eternal, through the perfect self, from all, doubt-free. All right, so let's go and look what I wrote in the journal when I contemplated this on May 9th, 2015. And it looks like when I contemplated this then, I came to the same conclusion, because listen to what I wrote. When the ego appears to end, keep quiet. Cling to the self. There is no reason to look away from the truth that has been realized. You hear that? Go zip yourself up in a sleeping bag. And maybe not literally. You know, maybe literally for a time. Maybe for a time you need to go to the Awakening Together retreat house and just chill. You know, when we get that, you need to go somewhere like that, maybe. But there is no reason to look away from the truth that has been realized. That needs to be the focus, right? The focus, because there could be a dormant piece of ego there. And so we want to stay strong in spirit. And the good news is, if there is a dormant bit of ego there, that one thought, if we stay strong in spirit, it will at one point show itself, just like it did with Jesus, right? With the fig tree and the buyers and sellers in the temple. Actually, they were just in the courtyard of the temple. They weren't in the temple. but the buyers and sellers in the courtyard of the temple. And then, of course, the facing physical death, right? This is when it came back up for him. But if we're strong in spirit, which Jesus was, then even though these temptations arise, we're able to stay with our sane mind and not run off giving attention to the ego, believing the ego again. You know, Jesus could have, right? Jesus could have decided when he went into the temple courts that day and saw these buyers and sellers, which again were always there. I could even tell you the story of why they were there, because there was an apparent necessity for it, but I won't write the second. But they were always there. It was perfectly normal business. But he goes in on this day, and for some reason it really aggravates him, you know, because this ego has risen up again, and he turns over all these tables, right? Well, Jesus could have decided that it was his job. Yeah, Jay has just written the reason the buyers and sellers were there. Jesus could have decided that it was his job now to become the overseer of religious practices and to make sure they're always pure, right? I even have a friend, I think, who's kind of fallen into that in this lifetime. He thinks he's the overseer of all course teachers, and he has to make sure all course teachers are doing it the way he envisions they should be doing it, right? Jesus could have followed that thought, in other words. Right? And if Jesus had followed that thought and became this, you know, responsible, I have to oversee everyone else and make sure they're all doing it right thing, the ego would have risen up in him again and become strong again. But Jesus didn't do that. Right? Jesus was strong in spirit. He slipped a little bit that day. You know, I always say Jesus had a bad day. But by the next day, by the next morning, he was back. He was aware of the error he had made. He had no guilt or judgment. He was just back in spirit, back in the heart, and explaining to Peter, you know, the importance of remaining vigilant for the kingdom. Right? He didn't become the new overseer of religious practice. So that's what we want to do. We want to follow that model should this awakening experience come to us. We don't want to throw it all. That's it. I'm awakened. Woohoo! Party time. You know, we don't want to do that. Yay! I achieved the, what were the words here? The supreme object has been gained. Woohoo! I did it. Finally. You know, I mean, I think the ego would come soaring back if... fly right back into our mind if we went about it. Instead, it's that keep quiet, right? Keep humble. Remain the student, right? Abide in spirit. There could be something still there. So again, 779 in the journal says, when the ego appears to end, keep quiet. Cling to the self. There is no reason to look away from the truth that has been realized. I love that. There is no reason to look away from the truth that has been realized. Let's go on to our next quote. And yeah, just for those who might be listening on the radio or listening to this as a recording, Jay did write on the board the reason the buyers and sellers were there. The answer is that all over Israel, the different little areas used different currency. And when they came to Jerusalem, what they needed to do usually was purchase an animal because they traveled far, far distances. It would be difficult to bring an animal with them to sacrifice. It has to be this perfect animal according to their tradition, right? So they would actually come into Jerusalem. They go over to a money changer and they would change their local currency for Jerusalem's currency. And then they would go over to a buyer and seller of animals. And depending on what they could afford, they'd buy a dove, or they'd buy a sheep or something like that. And then they would turn it over to the temple priests. I think probably also with a little donation for the temple. They needed some of the currency for that, and the sacrifice occurred. So this was considered normal practice. Now, probably some of the exchange rates were not fair. You know, there may have been some ripping off going on, but I don't know that for a fact. But I do know that it was normal practice in the courtyard of the temple for this business to be occurring, which enabled people to make their sacrifice, which they felt was at that time something they had to do. So, and Jay is saying, and I don't know this for a fact either, so Jay might know what I don't know. Jay says that they on the sly recycled some animals. They were faked sacrifices, but I don't know that. So I don't know that. But I do know it was normal business practice in the courtyard of the temple to have this activity going on. And most people considered it a service. So, so let's go on to 780. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, when the false self ceases utterly, and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end, then, by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. When the false self ceases utterly, and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end, then, by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. So this, again, is something that I have read over and over and over and over and over again. But prior to reading it, I had an intuition about it. And so because I had an intuition about it prior to reading it, I consider it verified, even though I haven't had the experience myself yet. The intuition, and this is, I don't need to go into how long ago I had this intuition. This was a long time ago, even prior to me practicing awareness, watching awareness. But I knew about awareness, watching awareness. I had already read Michael Langford's book. It was back then. It was called The Most Rapid and Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. I read that for the first time in January of 2008. Although I did not start practicing awareness, watching awareness until, you know, I think it was 2 years ago. Hi, Jamie. But I knew about awareness, watching awareness, and I had this sense that when I close my eyes and watched awareness, or even if I was eyes open, being aware that I'm aware, kind of like Bentinho's, you know, 2 to 5 second glimpses many times during the day, I had this sense that the awareness that I was paying attention to was not the divine awareness. You might call it a reflection of the divine awareness, like the moonlight is the reflection of the sunlight. But I knew I was focusing on the moonlight, and this was before I read this anywhere. And in fact, I used to have the question that Michael Langford actually answers in his book, but I may have overlooked it at that time. I had the question in my mind, you know, why are we focusing on this awareness when this isn't the divine awareness? And he answers that beautifully in his book when he shares the story about the mansion. If you're in a dark, dark mansion with many, many dark rooms, and you're trying to find the sun, but and you see this little glimmer of light, right? Wouldn't it be good to follow that little glimmer of light back to the source? Isn't that going to be the best way to find the sun instead of running around in all these other dark rooms? And our human awareness, the one we wake up to in the morning, is like that little glimmer of light. It is the reflection of the divine light. And so we follow that reflection back to the divine light. But I think that there are people who don't know this yet. And so they feel that just because they can be aware of awareness right now, that, oh, you know, this is it, this is awakening, and that pop to divine awareness has not occurred, nor are they aware that there's an awareness beyond awareness, right? And in fact, you know, now my language has gotten all, you know, convoluted. I use different words to mean the same thing at different times. But back then, to myself, I don't know if I ever even spoke about this because I felt like it was a secret. Nobody wanted to know. But back then, what I would do is I would call this awareness that I focus on in awareness watching, awareness meditation, I actually would call this consciousness. And that, which I was really seeking to find or seeking to realize, I called awareness. So I had two different words at one time. I don't anymore. You know, you can't trust me to use that language in that way anymore. But to myself, I did. So I would focus on consciousness, knowing that consciousness, as I called it, was the pathway to awareness, which was divine, absolute. It's like following the moonlight back to the sun until you trace that moonlight all the way back to its source, the sun. So, this quote again says, when the false self ceases utterly and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end, then by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. So what this is talking to me, what this is saying to me, is that that supreme awareness that is beyond the reflected awareness, that supreme awareness is known when the mind is completely dead, utterly ceases, gone, right? And that would be, you know, what Michael Langford calls Manonasa, but we could call it the true awakening, the awakening to truth. So I'll read the quote one more time, and then we'll look and see what I wrote in the journal. When the false self ceases utterly, and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end, then, by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. All right, so I'm going to look at my journal entry from May 9th, 2015. It seems there is some awareness of the self arising now. It seems there is some direct experience and therefore some knowledge. However, this idea is another idea to be let go. As long as the active movement of mind remains, the true self is hidden. Be humble. Do not claim to know what you do not know. Follow your practice. Be committed. Be happy. sometimes I hear people talk about spiritual practice, things like meditation, contemplation, etc., as if it is a should. Almost like if I don't do this, I must be bad. And that's just not what spiritual practice is. In fact, I don't think you can should yourself into spiritual practice. I think it wouldn't be spiritual practice then, even if you were doing the same thing. If you were doing it against your will somehow, right? It's not it. It can't be against your will. It has to be with your willingness. It has to be your heart calling you forth into it in order for it to be spiritual practice. So what's interesting is to me in this moment is how I ended that journal entry with be happy. Love this. You know in your heart you're called to it. Don't let your mind turn it into a chore. You guys may remember when Ellie Ruzdar was here, or recently when I went over the Ellie Ruzdar audio again. Remember she said, it can't be a chore. Do you remember those words? It can't be a chore. One thing that's always been very magical or miraculous for me was something that I learned through NTI, when NTI was coming. And that was the question, what do I truly want? Because it's almost as if, you know, as long as we have this split mind, or some people even call it a split heart, but as long as the ego is still here, and sometimes we fall for the ego, let's put it that way, the ego has its desires. And then the heart has its desires. So if we aren't discerning regarding desires, we could be listening to the ego's desires and believing those are our desires. But when we do that, we're being completely fooled because we are not the ego. I mean, this is what you discover in awareness, watching awareness meditation, is that you are not the mind. You are what witnesses the mind. And even more than that, I think, you are the spaciousness that the mind arises in, that the mind dances in. Right? So if you're not the mind, which you aren't, then the mind's desires are not your desires. Right? So what NTI taught me was to ask that question, what do I truly want? And for some reason, like I said, it was very magical or very miraculous for me. But whenever I would ask that question, what do I truly want? I would literally drop from the head to the heart. And whatever I may have been desiring a moment ago, it would just vanish. I didn't have to struggle to let go of something I wanted. You hear people use that language. I didn't have to struggle to let go of something I wanted. I realized it wasn't what I wanted. And I came into contact with my true desire, which I often now call spiritual aspiration. And as soon as I came into contact with true desire, everything shifted. You know, maybe a second ago it seemed like I preferred to get work done than to take time for meditation and contemplation. A second ago it may have seemed like, you know, this is really important, I want to get this done. You know, so-and-so is waiting on it and I want so-and-so to think I'm responsible, right? But when I ask, what do I truly want? Truth realization, awakening, to know thyself, however that's worded, right? And then the calling, instead of being to work or whatever I was called to a moment ago, it naturally shifts, and now I want to sit down and take very genuine, very sincere, very focused time with my contemplation and my meditation. It's not a chore, although sometimes I may need to remind myself of what I really want by asking that question, by allowing that shift to occur. So that's what the be happy at the bottom of this journal entry says to me. Be happy. You know, keep making that shift so that you're doing this because you want to. Don't let it become a chore. Let it be your love because it is. Kind of reminds me of that message in the teachings of Inner Ramana. Let's see. I should have Inner Ramana nearby. Here we go. You guys will recognize this message, but I'm going to read it to you, at least parts of it anyway. It's called The Love of Discipline. Today I will talk about discipline. Discipline is a dirty word to the mind. It screams lack of freedom, control, and extends ideas of being forced to do things you do not really want to do. But I ask you to look at the idea of discipline again and ask, who is the I that has these ideas? Who is the I that feels beaten down by the idea of discipline? Right now, it is as if two eyes live within you. It is time we begin to look at these two eyes now. One eye is the false thought, the false idea of who you are. The other eye is best described now as your true heart. One reason for learning the difference between these two eyes is so you can learn to distinguish the difference between the eye that speaks for what you want and the eye that sounds like you, but in truth, it is an imposter. Let's look again at the idea of discipline. I have told you that discipline means consistency. You know that you want the consistent experience of God without end and without distraction. And you also know that consistent practice brings this experience. So you see, you love it. You are grateful for it. You want with your whole heart to embrace it. It is the false I that wants to throw this idea away. It is the false I that resists and tells you that you hate discipline. This is why it is helpful to question the false I thought that poses as you. This thought is literally an obstacle to the experience of the true self. This false identification is everything that stands in the way of you knowing you. And if you continue to listen to it and continue to believe it as if its statements are your thoughts, then you continue to miss out on the experience of your truth. The I thought must be questioned, and it must be seen that this thought isn't you. Let's talk about the love of discipline. Discipline is like a roadway lined with beautiful flowers and trees and green pastures to a destination that is literally more beautiful than your imagination. Who wouldn't want to take this road? And as they travel, embrace every moment of the beautiful and amazing journey. This is discipline. It is consistently applying your devotion. It is lovingly loving your love. It is giving yourself exactly what you want. Questioning the I thought that disagrees with discipline is like checking the map to make sure you don't leave this lovely road for a dry and dusty and bumpy one that heads off into the desert, away from the lusciousness of your love. Follow your heart is more than just a saying. When you can hear your true heart calling, following your heart is literally following a beacon home. And it will lead you there straight away if you remember that the beacon and the true I are one. And in fact, that's what I've often called that question, what do I truly want? I've called that my true north or my north star, right? My true north or my north star. It keeps me focused, staying in touch with what I really want. So again, 780 from the journal. First, let me read the quote again. Let me go back to 780 and the seven steps to awakening. When the false self ceases utterly and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end, then by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. When the false self ceases utterly, and the motions of the mind caused by it come to an end. Then, by discerning the hidden self, the real truth that I am that is found. And now the journal entry. It seems there is some awareness of the self arising now. It seems there is some direct experience and therefore some knowledge. However, this idea, by the way, this is probably because I had started practicing awareness, watching awareness by this point. However, this idea is another idea to be let go. As long as the active movement of mind remains, the self is hidden. Right, I was looking at the reflection of the sunlight that comes as moonlight rather than knowing the source of the sun. Be humble. Do not claim to know what you do not know. Follow your practice. Be committed. Be happy. And so that takes us to quote 781. Ooh, 781 is a bit of a long one. We'll start it. We won't be able to finish it, I don't think. It looks like I spent a long time contemplating quote 781. Quote 781. When free from the grasp of selfish personality, he reaches his real nature. Bliss and being shine forth by their own light. So obviously this quote is continuing on the same theme of the previous quotes. But one thing that was in quote 779 and 781 that I have not commented on, and so I will now, is this term, selfish personality. Selfish personality. Did you guys know that every one of you, and me included, did you know that we're selfish? Did you know that the ego can't help but be selfish? It isn't aware of how not to be selfish. It isn't. And one way to describe this selfishness, because, you know, some of you may say, well, I give money, I help others. And you might, I think it's great if you do. I do too. It's funny, I was at the grocery store today, and, you know, just like everybody else, they're collecting money to give to, Hurricane Harvey. They call them victims, the people that were in Hurricane Harvey. And so they asked the lady in front of us if she wanted to give. And she said, no, I already give. And then she went through this long list of the charities that she gives to. The ego is selfish. You know, maybe the ego is selfish in that I'm someone who doesn't give. You know, that I think I need to keep all of my money for myself. You know, kind of like a Scrooge, right? In A Christmas Carol, remember Scrooge? Maybe I'm a Scrooge. And maybe in that way I am selfish. Or the Grinch. The Grinch is another great example of selfishness. But maybe I'm a more generous personality. The fact that I'm a more generous personality does not mean I'm not selfish. What selfishness is only seen from your point of view. That's selfishness. And the ego is naturally selfish. And if you don't believe me, just sit and watch the ego. Sit and watch those thoughts in your mind. Sit and listen to when that I chatter is happening, right? Listen to what this I chatter is saying. Ask, whose point of view is this? And the answer is going to be mine. You know, what the ego thinks of you, what the ego thinks of me, what the ego thinks of Bentinho, what the ego thinks of President Trump, what the ego, it's all one selfish point of view. One of the things I loved reading in Jan Fraser's book, When Fear Falls Away, is there's a paragraph in that book where she talks about until she awakened, she had no idea how selfish, and her words were something like, even a well-meaning spiritual person like me was, right? Because you can't see past the ego if the ego is there as your blinders. And so you have a selfish point of view. And that's why quote 779 says, bringing to an end the activity of the selfish personality. And then 781 says, when free from the grasp of selfish personality. You see, selfish personality is synonymous with ego. Ego is synonymous with selfish personality. It's just the way it is. Yeah, and Jay has said, when those pesky little buried ego pieces come to light, oh, not so spiritual sounding. Yeah, some of you may have seen, or maybe all of you have seen, how vicious that ego can be, right? Underneath the blankets there. So that's one thing I just want to comment on. Another person I read once who said she had awakened, I don't even remember her name, but I read her book for some reason. Maybe she sent it to me and asked me to read it. And they only remember one thing from her book, but one thing jumped out at me. She said, again, until she had awakened also, she did not know how selfish the ego was. And she says, but, you know, for example, this was her example, when you are driving towards a traffic light, you're hoping it will stay green long enough for you. You see that point of view? You know, there are a lot of other people heading towards this light too. But what are you thinking? I hope it stays green for me. See, it's naturally selfish. Doesn't mean you're not a person who gives to charity, because you might be. But it just thinks that way. It's just the way the ego thinks, right? Okay, so now we are just have our eyes open to the selfish personality. And that's okay just to have your eyes open to that. In fact, if you have your eyes open to it, then sometimes when those selfish thoughts occur, you'll be able to just let them go like you would any other thought, right? You'll, that's just the selfish personality thinking, right? And just let it go. As the true self is not selfish. The spaciousness in which the ego arises is certainly not selfish. When free from the grasp of selfish personality, he reaches his real nature. Bliss and being shine forth by their own light. Okay, so I'm going to look and see what I wrote in the journal. This is 781A, which means I contemplated this quote more than once. Truth realization is achievable. It is achievable by letting the ego go. Free yourself from the ego at every opportunity. Be happy when another opportunity to let go arises. So you see, that's the advantage again of recognizing the selfishness, of really being tuned into the fact that this ego is very, very selfish. It sees from my point of view, right? I don't see from Rush Limbaugh's point of view. I've been made very aware of that by some of his recent comments. I don't see from Donald Trump's point of view, but I also don't see from Barack Obama's point of view. I don't see from Kim Jong-un. I don't see from his point of view. I don't see from Lisa Hester's point of view. I don't see from Ken Gibson's point of view. Right? And so to remember, you know, we've been using the word selfish, but I think another word that is inspiring to me is narrow. Remembering how narrow the ego point of view is encourages me to let go of what appears to be my point of view, what appears to be my opinions, because they're narrow. You guys have probably heard me say things like, I'm one of over 7 billion people. How important can my opinions be if they're one in 7 billion? Actually, I think it's more like 7.4 billion now. Think about how narrow and limited and shallow your opinions are. And when you're able to see it that way, again, without judgment, you know, people sometimes use judgment with these types of words, but it's not meant to judge. It's just meant as an insight. When you're able to see how narrow and limited your point of view is, it's easier to let it go because it means nothing. It becomes meaningless. How meaningful can it be? Right? It's just my selfish point of view. And it's through letting go of that selfish personality, through letting go of those narrow-minded points of view, that we are letting go of ego and therefore preparing ourselves for truth realization. Because we've seen that truth realization is equal to the end of ego. So as we let go of ego, we are moving towards self-realization. So truth realization is achievable. It is achievable by letting the ego go. Free yourself from the ego at every opportunity. Be happy when another opportunity to let go arrives. And again, we have that happiness here. This is something I learned from NTI as well. NTI taught me to celebrate the opportunities to let go of ego. So I may be feeling a sense of control around something, and somebody else is wanting to, quote, do it for me, but I'm like, gosh, but I want it done my way. If I let you do it, it might not be done my way. I remember I had that experience with my grandma. I didn't like doing the dishes around her at her house because she'd stand over us telling us exactly how to do the dishes. We had to do them her way, right? So you didn't want to help. But, you know, maybe I'm feeling that way. You know, I don't want your help because I want to do it my way. Why do I think my way is the best way? It's only a limited point of view. Every single person who would do this would probably do it differently. Why do I think my way is the best way? Let it go. It doesn't need to be done my way. right? Let that go and let this person do the dishes or help out with whatever they want to help out with and do it their way, right? And celebrate the fact that I saw that temptation to cling to the selfish ego and instead let it go. Be happy when another opportunity to let go arrives. So with that, what I'm going to do is release the mic, and Ken will keep you occupied for a moment while I save this audio, and then I will come back and we'll have a member meeting. Okay? Bye.